For as long as I can remember, I have been fascinated with culture, specifically the culture inside of companies. What makes it work? What makes it not work? I've been in a lot of companies over the last 30 years of my career, and most of them, frankly, have sick, toxic cultures that eventually destroy most of the people who are in it. In fact, the people who survive in those kinds of cultures tend to be the people who create a bad situation for everybody, yes. And then there's Michelle Scirocco. I ran into her at a happy hour a couple of weeks ago. A mutual friend introduced us. She told me what she did, and I instantly knew I had to have her on the show. Michelle Scirocco is a living, walking, talking example of how to transform a culture from an individual person all the way up to a company and beyond into our most significant institutions. I'm thrilled to have Michelle Scirocco on this episode of the Cult Your Brand podcast.
Strap in, folks. We're going for a ride.
It's the Cult Your Brand podcast.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Cult Your Brand podcast. I'm your host, Jack Heald. My co-host, Matthew Thornton, is, I think in the business they say he's on assignment. But the reality is I just picked this show and jumped on it because I had the opportunity. I am here today. My guest is Michelle Scirocco, who has a long title with a company called Televerde. Michelle, welcome to the Cult Your Brand podcast.
Oh, thank you so much, Jack. I'm thrilled to be here.
All right. So give us your title, and then I want you to tell us about Televerde, and then we're gonna dive right in.
Okay. Well, like you said, I have a really long title. It's Chief Social Responsibility Officer, but I typically say it's short for or long for Chief Purpose Officer. So my job here at Televerde is really about talking about and promoting the purpose of our business.
Now, I'm going to jump in here and say, when I met you the other night over at the bar, we met at a birthday party. You told me your title and your name and all that kind of stuff, and I just kind of went, blah, 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 whatever. because the words sound very much like the same kind of position and responsibility you hear in a million other Me Too kind of businesses. But the reason you're here, the reason I'm here in your office, is because Televerde is not like anything I've ever seen before. So tell us about Televerde and why this role as the Chief Social Responsibility Officer really makes you utterly unique, as far as I can tell, in the business world, in the corporate world, and makes Televerde an extraordinary story. I know it's a long question, but the microphone is yours.
I will have a long answer. How about if we do that? So I'll start out with just what is Televerde. So Televerde is a business-to-business sales and marketing outsourced agency that essentially combines best-in-class sales and marketing technology with the human touch to generate demand, develop sales opportunities, and close business for our clients, who are really the biggest and the brightest companies in the technology industry, companies like SAP, Adobe, Marketo, Dell. But it's not really the what we do that's very interesting.
Exactly.
It's the how we do it that really makes all the difference in the world. So Televerde is a company that was founded 25 years ago. It was founded in purpose based on the idea that providing women in prison with jobs, training, and education while they're incarcerated, we could enable them to really develop highly marketable skills and transition back into the community, into real career opportunities, either here at our company or working for our clients or other companies here in the Valley, and become not just financially independent, but financially successful, and reunite with their children, with their families, and become productive members of society. The idea was really the brainchild of our former CEO and co-founder, who had a background in technology. And this was 1995, 1996. So if you think about the time frame, the Y2K, ERP, even the internet was a thing.
And
he just had a vision that if we could teach the women to sell, particularly technology, he could build a profitable business that would give them the skill set to be very successful, because if you know anything about sales, they make more money than anybody else. And they could go into an industry that he believed would be less discriminatory against their non-traditional background, if you were.
Yeah.
So here we are 25 years later, and it was brilliant. We now have 5 of our 9 engagement centers are located in women's correctional facilities, either here in Arizona or in Indiana. We are expanding into Her Majesty's Prison, I love to say that, in Manchester, England. And we've had over 3,000 women go through the program over the past 25 years. And kind of the coolest thing about the 3,000 women going through the program, well, there's quite a few cool things. But
yeah, well, I can imagine.
One of the greatest is that for the women of Televerde, our 3-year recidivism rate is 5.4%, compared to a national average of upwards of 60% of the people who are released from prison will go back within 3 years.
Yeah.
And then on top of that,
and you know, it only makes sense. You go into prison probably because you've made a bunch of bad choices in life, and in prison you learn this phenomenally profitable and legal and high demand skill.
Yes.
It probably makes it a whole lot easier, I'm guessing, to make better decisions, but I know there's way more to it than that. I want to find out more. So I'm sorry to interrupt. But.
Oh, no, you're fine. Well, but I think your point is absolutely right. So oftentimes there's a mindset or a belief that people in prison are ignorant or incapable or unskilled, and that, you know, when they get out of prison, the best that they could get is low-wage, low-skilled jobs.
Yeah, of course.
But in most cases, people in prison, or a lot of cases, are people who had a desire for upward mobility, but perhaps didn't have the opportunity in their lives. Right, they didn't come from a family, or they didn't live in a space where they would have those opportunities. So they created their own form of upward mobility.
Sure.
I refer to it as a misguided sense of entrepreneurial spirit.
Right, and I'm guessing that most, this is an utterly uneducated guess, but I'm guessing that most of the women in prison are there for drug-related offenses, and I can guess that because I know factually that most of the people in prison are in prison for drug-related offenses.
Yeah, so the current stat here in Arizona is that 83% of the women in prison at the time of their admission had moderate or intense need for substance abuse treatment. So the
holy smokes.
So the crimes themselves are either drug-related, possession, sales, distribution, that type of thing, or there's something that happened while they were on drugs or trying to get drugs, or so it's all interrelated to the substance abuse problems.
Okay. All right. So I think that's a great introduction. Now, you know, I started this show because I'm fascinated with the things that build a strong culture, maintain a strong culture, and also, on the flip side, the things that destroy a culture. And I walked in the lobby of the building here, and I started looking at the art that's on the wall and reading the captions underneath the art. I'm guessing that Televerde employees have done all that art.
All of the artwork that you saw in the lobby was the result of a art contest that I ran a few years ago. We were looking for things for customer engagement, right? So thank you cards.
Sure.
And,
okay.
You know, things. And the idea was that there's so much talent in the prisons. And so we ran an art contest inside the prisons, and the women all submitted artwork. That their direction was simply, with whatever medium you would like, do something artistic that shows how you feel about Televerde.
The word that kept jumping out to me, and this is why I'm jumping out of my skin sitting here with you, was the word transformation.
Yes.
Because that is, at the core, that's what I'm fanatical about with this show, is how do we transform our cultures, our family cultures, our business cultures, our societal cultures? What are the things that make that happen? And I walk in this building, and there's just such an obvious vibe that I feel like captures the reality that I'm after. How do we transform culture? You've gone into the places where it is the most desperately needed, and have succeeded. I want to hear you talk about that. But some of the stories I'm interested in are how long the women who work in this company have been with the company. Because aside from just recidivism, it looks like people are fanatically loyal to the company.
Yeah.
And that is a cultural thing. So I'm just, talk about anything there that interests you.
So, well, I'll talk about kind of the loyalty that is without a doubt. I personally have been here 20 years, going on 21 years. If we walk down the hall, when we walk out of here, I'll introduce you to Dawn, who's one of our VPs of sales, and Alicia is another VP of sales. Dawn's been here 20 years. Alicia's 8 years. Right outside my door is Ashley, who's been with us for 11 years. And the list goes on and on. And it's people in every department, every level of the organization.
And I want to confirm, these are all women who have been in prison.
Yes.
They didn't graduate with a silver spoon in their mouth and attend an Ivy League university and go to work for a Big Five accounting firm.
We have some of those.
Well, sure.
But yeah, 40% of the people who work here at our corporate office started their career with the company while they were incarcerated. And that is literally people in every single department, every level of the organization, including 30% of our executive leadership team started their career while they were in prison. But when you talk about transforming culture, and what the one thing that I want to say is I've got to get you out to the prison to actually
I'm totally coming.
Actually see and experience what it's all about, because to me it's the happiest place on earth. That sounds like the strangest thing a person could ever say about a prison. But when I go into the prison and I walk off the prison yard and I go into the engagement centers where our ladies work, the energy and the enthusiasm that just exudes in everything that they're doing and the way they communicate and what they're planning for, they have so much hope and belief in the future that you walk away exhilarated. I mean, it's contagious. The number one thing that our clients say after I take them out to visit the women and meet their teams is that the women of Telo Verde know more about their products and services than their own sales executives, because they're like sponges. They're so eager to learn and they're so excited to learn. They take it home with them, and it's this immersive experience where they sit on the yards and they talk about the work that they're doing, and then by nature women are nurturing and caring, so they're constantly helping us each other to learn and to grow and come with me on this journey, because together we can be successful and we don't have to go back to the life that we had before. And they know they don't have to go back to the life they had before because they have examples of other women who have gone before them. And so they know, you know what, if she can do it, by golly, so can I.
I can imagine that hearing that gavel come down and be pronounced guilty and then be sentenced and having that radical fall from the grace of society can just suck every ounce of life and hope out of a person. And so the obvious emotional rebound that can occur when there's hey, here's a chance to change your life. It's clear why that would have an effect, but I want you to talk about the process. How does Telo Verde recruit? I don't even know what the right word is, but talk about the typical woman who ends up working for Telo Verde on the phones from prison. What's her journey like, and how does she come to work for you, and then well, take it from there.
How about if I tell you the story from a personal standpoint?
Go for it.
So for me personally, the day that I stood in front of the judge and I heard the words that, you know, Michelle, I hear what everybody's saying. You did know the difference between right and wrong, and you have a good support system, and you had a good upbringing. And so based on what I know about you now, I know that you knew the difference. And so therefore, I'm going to give you the maximum sentence of 7 years. And it was the moment in my life when everything changed. I had no idea that that's what was going to happen to me that day. Wow. I thought I was going to get a slap on my wrist and go home with some probation or maybe a little bit of time. And so you hear people talk about their darkest hour, and that was what it was. And so for me, at the darkest, lowest point of my life, I had to say, good golly, how did I get here? And oh my gosh, how am I going to recover? And I had to come to terms with what I was dealing with. And so the first thing I did was try to come to terms with, okay, everything happens for a reason. And I got a certain amount of time because that's exactly the way it's supposed to be. And I have to figure out how I use this time to become, to overcome what's happened. And I was lucky enough to have a counselor who gave me the best advice of my life and who said, Michelle, you can spend your time worrying about what other people think about you, or you can figure out how you use this time to reinvent yourself and become the best version of your life. And that is really kind of the tipping point for me when I said, okay, I have to fix myself physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. I have to figure out how I'm going to get a job when I get out because, number one, I have a felony conviction, and nobody wants to hire somebody with a felony conviction. So I've got to get an education. I have to learn some vocational skills. The only thing I'd ever done was tend a bar, and not a good thing.
Yeah. Not a big career path there.
Not a big career path. You know, the idea of being a 40-year-old bartender, slinging drinks just was not really that attractive, right? So I said, I've got to figure out how to get a career, and then I heard about this thing called Televerde. And I heard about Televerde.
Was it just the grapevine, or?
Oh yeah, so through the prison thing, right? This thing called Televerde, that if you got a job there, and you were good at it, you could get a job at their corporate office when you got out. And so that's like bingo. That's what happens. And so my story, although my story is almost 25 years old, the story is not that dissimilar from today,
sure.
Right? So the women are at the worst point in their life. They meet somebody, they get to prison, somebody on the yard tells them, hey, there's this thing called Televerde, because we're always encouraging and coaching. And so then they say, this is, honestly, it can change your life, right? It can change your life, because that's where we are today. So
sure.
When I started, it was just that we were a little teeny tiny company, and I just said, oh, if it's a job I can have when I get out of prison, then by golly, I'm just going to be the absolute best at that job. And then they'll have to take notice of me, and then they'll give me a job. And so that's how my story went. We're much bigger today, and we're much more defined in our processes and much more well-known. But the journey is the same. They find out about the opportunity. They start learning. We post for the jobs on the yards when we have opportunities to hire people. So just like any other job that you would apply for, it's just a different population. There's a job board. We post. They have to meet a fundamental set of criteria, GED, high school diploma, which is interesting because in many cases, that's the first order of business for the women.
Getting them educated?
Yeah, they come to prison and they don't have their GED. They maybe don't even have an eighth grade education.
Wow.
So their friends encourage them to get into the education program, to get into the GED program, so that they can get the job at Televerde. Because on top of everything else, Televerde is the best paying job in the prison. Like, and it's the job that enables you to be not just enables you to have money, be financially independent while you're in prison, pay child support, and build a savings account for when you get home. And all the while, you're building really highly marketable skills that will give you a career. So this is hands down the best thing going. And so the women start encouraging each other. They apply for the job. Then we go through a process. There's a typing test. There's a written skills test. There's interview, just like any other job. We
right.
pick, if we've got 10 positions open, we, out of the 50 applicants, we pick the 10 best. And then they go through a 6 to 8 week training program. That's accredited by the Rio Salado Community College. They get 6 credit hours for their new hire training. And a lot of what happens in the new hire training, this is to your transformation discussion, is they transform,
yeah.
Right? So they come and they're, the women will say it all the time, they're like broken,
sure.
Right? And so the first thing that we do in training is rebuild their self-confidence.
Okay.
And then, you know, work on the business skills, right? So it's like a mini MBA. They learn uh-huh. everything that you would learn in an MBA, at a lower level, but everything about an organization, about the people in an organization, the structure, the technology, to prepare them to be able to have business conversations. Then we teach them about communication. Then they go on to learn about how they got to actually do the job. So it's just teaching all that basics. And so my favorite thing is I go and I speak to the women usually in their first or second week of new hire training. And the women that I meet are completely different than the women that when I come back 8, 10, 12 weeks later for their graduation, there's already a transformation.
Talk about what that looks like. What's that transformation? How's it appear?
Yeah, so it's funny that you say that because that's exactly what the first transformation is appearance. So suddenly they're sitting up taller. Their clothes are a little neater. Their eyes are brighter. They're much more engaged. Their hair is done nicer because they've developed this confidence. Now they believe in themselves. They actually care about themselves. One of the gals, when I was out there recently, she's in one of the new hire classes, she said to me, she said, you know, when I got here, she said, I looked around. She said there was just some girls who looked different than everybody else.
Yeah.
They carried themselves different. They held themselves to a higher standard. They communicated so clearly and so effectively. She said, I didn't have any idea what they wanted, what they were all about. But when I looked at them, I knew whatever they had, I wanted to be a part of
it. Oh, my gosh.
And so she actively sought out, like, what are you doing here? Because I need to be part of that, you know. And then she talked about how it's already changed her life and her view of her future.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't even know where else to go with this. I will tell you, I was standing in the lobby, and you've got, I can't remember, it's Core Values maybe?
Yeah, posted, the Core Values.
The Core Values posted, and I've seen so many corporate Core Values. Again, every time I see that kind of thing, I just kind of roll my eyes, because I spent a lot of years in corporate America. I know the game. It's almost always empty words. When push comes to shove, it's just every man for himself. But I'm standing there, and the first thing I'd done is I'd over here on the left wall as you come in the door is the art, and I'd read all, I think there's 6 of them there. Mm-hmm. I'd looked at all the art, and I'd read what the women had written, and I started tearing up because the real transformation that I felt conveyed there in the words and the images was unmistakable. And then I turned around and on the right side, there's the core values. And for me, the experience was, although the core values, the words that are written there are not wildly different from what I've seen in lots of other core values, I began reading those as, oh my God, these people actually mean this. This is like an actual real life core value.
Yeah.
And I got chills. I have chills here just thinking about it. Talk a little bit about how that, tell me about Televerde compared to all the places that I know you go telling the story of Televerde.
You know, so when yeah. So when I think about Televerde compared to the rest of the world, I think about it in terms of first, I've been here for going on 21 years, and that's not to say that this is the only place I could work, right? You know.
Sure.
So I have a background and I have a history, but I also have, you know, I've grown up with the company. I've led teams. I'm chief marketing officer.
Yeah, you're the kind of person that almost any outbound facing organization wants to have out there.
So when I've gone out, because as much as I love it here, just like anybody else, you go out, you look for jobs, and you think maybe there's something better. Maybe the grass is greener. Mm-hmm. The one thing I know is every time I've gone to look, it's just different grass. And by the way, my grass is a whole lot healthier, right? My grass is lush and beautiful, and it's something to love, right? And so what I mean by that is that when I wake up every morning and I come to work, I can walk in from the first face that I see to the last face I see at the end of the day, and I can see the transformation. I can see the impact that our business is having on people's lives, on their families, on their children. The gal we walked by her when we were walking in here, she came in at the end of the summer. Her son was graduating as valedictorian. And, you know, she's been home for a couple of years. And you know, that
wow.
Children of incarcerated parents are three times more likely to go to prison. But yet here, because she's become a role model in the relationship she's developed, she's been able to take him, you know, and be there with him as he's become valedictorian at his school and change that generational impact that occurs with incarceration, right? Because this is all very generational. And so when you have the opportunity to work with a company that is so embedded in the purpose and you're so much of a part of it and you see it every day, it makes all the difference in how you feel about your job. Because on the days when I have the worst days ever and I'm like, oh, I can't do this today, you know, and you just want to go home and throw back a martini,
yeah.
Those are the days that inevitably, I'll walk out into the hallway and somebody will tell me some great story about they just bought a house or and if there's anything that makes my days better is just to go out to the prison and actually, you know, be part of that, because that's the difference is when you're running a purpose-driven company and the purpose is real and not just words on a wall, you feel it and you know it, and it's contagious.
I feel it in this building. As we were walking through, I just kind of had my intuitional feelers out, and honestly, visually, it looks like a million other call centers that are around the world. But it feels totally different. I was in a call center for some reason three years ago, and I felt like I was. It was kind of like walking down a dark alley in the ghetto, spiritually.
Oh.
You know, it was
so bad.
It was bright and light, but it was spiritually just awful. I want to read one of these values that I saw on your wall. And for my listeners, imagine all the places, all the corporate mission statements and core value statements you've seen on walls around the world. And imagine what it would be like if your companies actually genuinely believed this. Quality first. Set the bar at excellence. Raise it incrementally from there. People matter. Oh, my God. I'm so sick of hearing that. By taking a thoughtful approach to business interactions and human relationships, we improve all that is around us. You guys actually mean that.
Yeah.
People matter. You know, one of the things that drives culture is the sense that you belong, that you have people that you're deeply connected to, that you have, and that belonging to those people protects you from the chaos outside the walls and gives you a place to a future. Those are just common characteristics of a healthy culture. Oftentimes, the reason cultures are sick is because there is no sense of these people protect me from the chaos out there. I think that's possibly one of the key elements that I'm sensing with Televerde.
Yeah. Well, and it's more than protecting people from the chaos. It's you know, the idea was people matter, and that when you can take someone and you can identify and unleash their human potential, their full potential, it's an amazing gift that you're giving to them and to the rest of the world. And that's really what the idea of the business was built on, is that there's so much talent in people, regardless of whether or not they're the people in prison. There's so much talent in people that is overlooked, it's never been tapped into, that they don't even know, and that they don't even know exists. And when you can find that and you can empower them to really embrace it and allow it to grow, it doesn't just grow the person, it grows the business. It makes the world around us a better place.
So that puts me in mind of one of the never-ending problems of putting together a culture, a business culture, and that's human resources. Every business of any size has a human resources department, and you have HR. If somebody dies and leaves me in charge of the world, after I fire all the lawyers, I'm going to fire all the HR people. One would think that HR would be a nightmare with people like this, but I'm betting it's not.
You know, we have our own unique set of challenges, but one of the things that we did as a company back in 2011 was we founded a 501c3, a nonprofit organization, the Arrowette Foundation, because what we recognized, there were several reasons for doing it, but the original vision was that we knew that we couldn't hire everybody to come work at our corporate office when they got out of prison. We just don't have the capacity. And so really wanted to be able to find a systematic way to help the women find jobs. And so when we started it was a great idea, but we also realized that there was a lot of things, skills that were necessary to give the women everything that they needed to be placed into another company. Because if you came here to our corporate office, we had our own built-in support system and accountabilities and how we could help people, you know, move and develop through the process. But placing them in another company, they didn't have that same structure and support. So we started the Arrowette Foundation, which starts they do a TOPS program, which is a three-year transformational model that starts 1 year before they're released, teaching them kind of all the workplace readiness stuff, resume writing, interview skills, soft skills for the off dress for success, but also personal stuff, you know, personal values, goal setting, financial planning, health and wellness, right, to prepare them to successfully transition out. And then the ongoing two-year model, when they get out, they have a mentor and ongoing classes for professional development, as well as financial resources to help them, healthcare resources to enable them to get the services that they need, services for family reunification. And then the third year, they move into they become the mentor, and they go into a leadership training program. So that, you know, as they continue to grow and develop.
So this is the first 2 years out of prison.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so that in itself helps with what you're talking about, some of the HR nightmare skills, because every company has HR issues and people issues. And honestly, the people issues, that's one of the things that I actually like to touch on, is the people issues we have with our population are no different than the people issues you have in any population. You know, we may have more of them, but it's the same everywhere you go. One of the facts about hiring returning citizens is, look, we have a growing skills gap in our country, right?
Yeah.
We all know this now. I mean, I'm not but just to set the stage for it, we're now 17 straight months that we've had more jobs available than we've had people looking for work, and it's only going to get worse. And
oh, good Lord, I had no idea.
Oh, so yes. Yeah, so actually, there's 7.3 million jobs available right now, and only 6.3 million people looking for work today. Our unemployment rate is lower than it has been since the 1960s.
Holy smokes. I knew broadly it was like that, but I had no idea the numbers were that profound.
So here's an interesting fact, right? So we have 70 million people in our country that have a criminal record. One in two people have an immediate family member that's currently or formerly incarcerated.
Oh, good grief.
We're spending...
Let's talk about criminal justice reform next time.
We're spending $182 billion a year on the criminal justice system and incarceration. But as I mentioned before, we have upwards of a 67% recidivism rate.
Oh, my God.
So the problem's not... We're not solving a problem, right?
Right.
The number one predictor for recidivism is joblessness.
Makes sense.
55% of people after 1 year after incarceration will report zero income. The average salary
for somebody
with a criminal record or a returning citizen their first year is $10,000. Okay, who's not going to go back to a life of crime? I'm sorry. I can't live on $10,000.
Yeah.
So we have this huge population that has a significantly higher unemployment rate, 25% higher unemployment rate for somebody with a criminal record, 40% for women with a criminal record. So we have this huge population of people who can't seem to get a job, yet.
So we've got these colliding factors of a huge skills gap, a bunch of unfilled jobs, and a large prison population of people who desperately need something
jobs.
To do.
Yep. The prison population of people who need jobs, but also this population of people who have they had a DUI when they were in college.
Right.
Or, you know, there's a zillion reasons why people might have a criminal record. There's a huge... We can fix the growing skills gap, or we can, you know, work to solve the growing skills gap through employing this population. People who have a criminal record as employees, there is 0% difference in termination rates, and they have a 13% higher retention rate. So
there you go.
They're right. Fundamentally, when you think about employee engagement and turnover in this market where, you know, look, the millennials, and it's not even just a millennial thing. When the market is this strong, people will walk across the street to make $10,000 more a year.
Right.
And it's happening all day.
Well, I was also just thinking, you know, your typical work day. You know, your boss is a jerk and your coworkers are idiots and the client is a moron.
Yeah.
And you say, I just can't take it anymore. On the other hand, if you've been in prison, you probably go, I've had a lot worse days than this.
Well, there's that. And the one thing that I say all the time is the only thing worse than going to prison is actually telling somebody that you've been there.
Yeah.
Right? So when you think about going through the interview process, and we can talk a little bit about that, too. You know, there's the whole ban the box movement, right? So some people know what that is. Some people don't. But I'll give you the one-second education on that, the one-minute education. Remember when you used to fill out job applications and there was always a box on there that said, have you ever been convicted of a felony?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's the box. So in an age of digital, everything, we're applying for jobs online, all the screenings are online, there's the box. Right.
Yeah,
so, for example, when I was talking earlier about looking for other positions myself, recently I was being heavily recruited for an executive level position that I was candidly overqualified for. But I thought I'd follow through and see what it would look like. And so the recruiter said, I need you to go online and fill out the thing so we can move this to the next level. And I got to the box and I thought, wow, like, really? This thing is. This, first of all, does this still exist at my level? I have to, you know, I get it. Okay, makes sense. I'm like, okay, so do I check the box? It's been 25 years, you know, or I'm like, not checking the box is lying. So I'm like, okay, go ahead, check the box. And it wasn't even a matter of 2 seconds before the system immediately closed down and said, thank you for your interest in this position.
Yeah.
So how many people in our workforce, if we have 70 million people with a criminal record, how many people are being overlooked just simply by the fact that the hiring managers aren't even getting to see them because of the box, right?
You know, I remember very clearly I was involved in the hiring process on multiple occasions, and you'd have a stack of, this was pre- that kind of automation.
Yeah.
But you'd have a stack of resumes. I can remember one time sitting and looking at a stack of resumes. I swear it was a foot high. And we had, I don't know, two openings. Mm-hmm. And at that point, you realize there is no way I'm going through all these resumes. I'm not going to read them all.
Right.
I'm just going to come up with some sort of criteria that allows me to throw them out.
Yeah.
And that's all that was. It's just, okay, if they don't have this or they do have that, I'm not even going to bother to read the rest of it. And it was done purely because it was impossible to go through it.
Yeah.
Well, otherwise, it was just, yeah.
Now we have a different
scenario. Now we can get now we can eliminate people efficiently, even faster.
Yes. Silly. Without any consideration for the human potential.
I will tell you, I sat there looking at that pile of things going, you know, there's probably some brilliant people in here, but the process itself is just so difficult. Okay, sorry, rabbit trail there.
So that's the thing is, you know, companies can, you know, ban the box, take it out of the screening process altogether, move it to the end, right? Get to find the most qualified candidate for the position, then have a conversation that says, hey, I'm going to do a background check. Is there anything I should know about? Right. Give the person opportunity to tell you, yeah, I was convicted of XYZ. You know, it was 10 years ago, it was 20 years ago, or it was 2 years ago. And here's what it was. And here's what I've done and how I've changed. And, you know, and give them an opportunity to explain and tell you why you should take a chance on them.
Well, you know, the Televerde model now, I think most folks would recognize we have a problem in this country with folks who have served their time. They're convicted of a felony. They pay their quote-unquote debt to society, but they're permanently stained from that point forward, which implies, well, you hadn't really paid your debt to society because we're not ever going to let you pay it off. You're never going to get to pay it off. So how do we change that? How do we change that culturally? Well, it seems to me like something like Televerde, which, look, here's how you do it. That's how you change that approach. No, at least that's kind of the camel's nose under the tent to changing our perception of, I mean, how many of us have done things that had we gotten caught, you know? If it's 70 million who got caught, I got to figure the numbers at least double that.
Right. it's true. I mean, because it's as simple as how many people didn't have one more glass of wine than they should have, you know? And if you had been in an accident, you know, it's a but for the grace of God go I scenario.
Yeah. So I honestly could just spend hours and hours. Talk a little bit about the art that I see around in here. I want to take photos, if you don't mind, so I can post them along with the interview.
Yeah, you're welcome to take photos. So my office, having been with the company for 20 years, my office is kind of and based on my general personality type, right? I am very extroverted and I'm very proud of a lot of things. And so when you look around my office, it's full of pictures. And rewards and gifts and everything in here was either it falls into that category, but you know, we look around and one window there is a series of pictures of women running marathons, and so I've personally run 10 marathons, and in every one of those marathons, it was a team of women from Televerde that I kind of organized and got together and coached to, you know, run their first marathon. And so 10 marathons, probably 40 women that went through and trained and coached and did a girls trip marathon with us. So part of the culture, you know, of doing things together and the friendships that have developed over the years. You see the picture from my my graduation from my bachelor's degree graduation, one of the proudest moments of my father's life, if you see him standing next to me in the picture right next to it, when I, you know, for me, that was the first time in my life that I really accomplished a goal that I'd set out to do. But then right across the room, you see my MBA from Arizona State University, which was without a doubt one of the hardest things I've ever done, but definitely the most rewarding. And then the last thing in my office that I'd talk about is the one thing that I am probably the most proud of. And it's a photograph of me and the former CEO, Jim Hooker, on the stage at a TEDx event. And it's TEDx Perryville Correctional, and it was a full-day TEDx event that took place inside the women's prison here in Arizona last April. And we had 275 people attend the event, and it was really and it was an experience that was life-changing for every single person that was involved. It was a team of 20 women in the prison, six organizers, volunteers here from the outside that organized and created the whole entire plan, and it was called Behind the Curtain. And Beauty, Brains, and Beyond, and it was all about exposing the real beauty and brains and talent that exists in our prisons. And we had seven women did TED Talks, which were some of the hands down best talks I've ever seen in my life. And I've been to two TED proper conferences myself, and these were so powerful and so well done. And it is to this day the single greatest day of my professional career was had the opportunity to be a part of that.
Well, Michelle, I know I could talk. I could listen for the rest of the day, but I know you have more things to do. If folks want to know more about Televerde, about getting involved with a nonprofit to help women who are transitioning from incarceration back into life, what's the best way to do that?
Well, obviously, our website, which is televerde.com. The Arrowettes website is arrowettefoundation.org. It's a mouthful.
I'll make sure it's printed.
Yeah. You can find me on LinkedIn. It's just LinkedIn/M. Sirocco, Michelle Sirocco. My Twitter handle is M. Sirocco. If you want to reach out to me directly, I'm happy to share anything that I can about our business and what we do and how we do it, why it matters. I always say that the two things that I love to do the most are, number one is talk about Televerde, and number two is to actually share the experience with people and see how it opens their minds and wins their heart as it relates to this whole concept of incarceration, reentry, recidivism, and the talent that exists
I will tell you, a month ago, women in prison never crossed my mind. And in the month since I met you and, you know, started to have some conversations with you and digging in, I'm captured. I'm absolutely captured by the whole thing. All right. Well, any last words for us before we wrap it up and call it a day?
Nope. I would just say to anybody, like you said, a month ago, women in prison were not something that you had thought of. I would just suggest that everybody take a step back and realize there's what's going on and open your mind to different ways of thinking about the talent that we have in our world.
Well, it's one of the most profoundly concrete examples of personal and corporate cultural transformation I've ever seen, and I want to be able to bottle it and spread it around. I absolutely do. All right, well, I want to remind our listeners the contact information that we've given, that Michelle has given, will be printed along with the podcast website. And thank you, Michelle, for this hour of conversation today. I want there to be more. On behalf of my not-here partner, Matthew Thornton, I'm Jack Heald. This is the Cult Your Brand podcast. Be sure to press that subscribe button so you're updated when we publish a new episode. We try to make that happen almost every week. We'll talk to you again soon. Thank you.
At Cult Your Brand, we explore the ideas and people that build stronger cultures and help make better connections. Connect with us on the web at cultyourbrand.com and on social media sites and YouTube. This has been a Cult Your Brand production.